You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
A hallucinatory journey into the heart of darkness, William Friedkin's pulse-pounding reimagining of the suspense classic, The Wages of Fear, was dismissed upon its release, only to be recognized decades later as one of the new Hollywood's boldest auteur statements. In a remote Latin village, 4 desperate figures, a New Jersey gangster, Rochida, a Mexican assassin, Francisco Rabal, an unscrupulous Parisian businessman, Bruno Cremer, and an Arab terrorist, Amadou, take on a doomed mission, transporting 2 trucks full of highly explosive nitroglycerin through the treacherous jungle. Aided by Tangerine Dream's otherworldly synth score, Friedkin turns each bump into the road into a tour de force of cold sweat tension, conjuring a hauntingly nihilistic vision of a world ruled by chance and fate. Now, when a 4K release of Sorcerer comes out, I go to my source on Sorcerer, the man who did such a definitive piece on Bright World Dark Room about the forces of fate and identity in William Friedkin's Sorcerer, that the man himself reached out while he was still alive to talk to him. I'm talking to Travis Woods, a man who's been given the freaking sword, has been knighted by one William Friedkin. Travis, Sorcerer on 4K, your beautiful essay for Bright World Dark Room in issue 71, like, tracked the kind of birth of this idea, its death and then resurrection, so that people could rediscover and revisit it. And I feel like a 4K release from Criterion is just yet another way to disseminate, like, the world, the word of Friedkin, the particular Bible that you've been singing its hymnal of for so long. Thank you for so much for coming to talk to me, but, like, is this exciting to you? Like, do you get a kick out of this 4K Criterion Sorcerer?
Well, Jesus God, yes, of course. I mean, I think any film fan would, although it's become increasingly trendy to love Sorcerer now.
It has.
Not to be that bitch, but man, I've been in the trenches since the horrible, horrible, horrible VHS release of this thing back in the day. I'll age myself by saying that my early teens were in the 1990s, and my first job was at a video store. And yep. This will probably surprise no one who knows me and my the depth and extent that my obsessions tend to go. I literally wore the tape out at the video store of Sorcerer. I watched it so many times that it eventually broke, snapped, much like the rope bridge in the film. It snapped. And I broke it, and we never got another one because I think by that point it was already out of fucking print, because who cares? Because no one cared about this movie, Sorcerer, which was such a huge bomb when Friedkin released it. It was part of that wave of movies that new Hollywood directors were releasing when they were given absolute power. You know, stuff like, New York, New York by Scorsese and Apocalypse Now by Coppola. These films that cost so much money, made no money. No one went to go see because everyone was busy seeing Star Wars. Yes, I am a disciple of this film. I have loved this film since even before I was an adult. It has always spoken to me. It's meditation on the forces of fate and how we, in a strange way, are our own force of fate. The decisions that we make way back in the past, they actually braid to form the eventual noose that will be our undoing at our end. And that is so much of what Sorcerer is about. Even the title, Sorcerer, it's about how fate is a cruel trickster that we ourselves create. And yes, I was lucky enough that the scariest moment of my life was getting a phone call from William Friedkin, who did enjoy this essay that I wrote called No Way to Managua, which is a line from the film. I wrote a very long piece about Sorcerer and my love for it. And he liked it, and he did call me, and it was maybe the scariest 2 hours of my life because I had no idea what was coming. It was a
So, can you just paint the picture? Because people, I'm going to link to your unbelievable essay. So, this is the thing. Sorcerer, way less available in Australia than even America. So, you can, if I'm scaling, you can see how much less readily available it was. Sorcerer, I had never heard of until I researched it early days of university, tried to find it, wasn't around. I think I saw it. It wouldn't have been too much longer before your essay, and then was becoming aware of you. This is before we were even friends, and read that essay. And I was like, this is unbelievable. And I watched it again and had a whole new set of eyes on it. And then when we became friends, I remembered saying like how much I admired that essay and how much I loved it and how much it really like opened the film for me because I really enjoyed it and I thought it was a feat of filmmaking. And but I it had never really it never sunk its claws into me like it had sunk into you. But then I watched it again through the lens that you'd sort of opened up with your essay. And I was like, wow, this is an absolutely incredible piece of filmmaking. And also storytelling and really the dark, you know, the dark inner workings of Friedkin's soul like coming out. It was brilliant. But you told me this story, which is just paint the picture of how he preliminarily gets in touch with you and then the call starts because you relayed all of this to me in live, but I it's such a fun, you know, he's such a Titanic figure. It's such a fun story to share. You don't have to share the exact things he said,
Well, sure, yeah.
but
Some of
just
that's private, but
how did it
well,
happen?
first off, to your point about Sorcerer, I will say right now, I mean, I am it is my belief on any given day, if you are to ask me objectively what is the greatest film ever made, my answer would be Seven Samurai, because it's the movie that contains all other movies. Everything that any other movie does, romance, comedy, action, espionage, drama, thriller, horror, it did it. And it kind of did it better than anyone else has ever done it. So that is my general go-to, very cliche, but I think also very real answer that it's Seven Samurai. And yet, and yet, and yet, and yet, I will say, the second I hit play on Sorcerer, and several hours thereafter, when I am reeling in its afterglow, the answer is Sorcerer. I do think it is. In hyperbole aside, I do think it is one. I think it is in the running for the greatest film of the 1970s, which makes it in the running for one of the greatest films, if not the greatest film of the 20th century, which also makes it in the running for one of the greatest films that just exists. I think it is in that conversation. It is in that argument. It is
Yeah,
certainly, I think,
if you're the
Friedkin's
best,
best.
if you're the best film of the 70s,
You're in the, you're already in the running. You're in the running.
it's the Leonard Hagler Hearns.
Yeah,
That's where you're
exactly.
fighting. You know, it's like
Yeah.
most middleweights today. You're like, yeah, they're good, but put one of them with those three
Yeah.
motherfuckers and see
And
how they go.
so, you know, while it did fail to reach critics and a commercial audience upon its release, it is obviously it has grown in estimation. It was a bit of a curio for a while because it had no real home video release of any worth. We'll get to that in a minute because I have some shit to say about that. But regardless, I wrote this thing 2017, 2018, 2019, somewhere around there. Just kind of my tribute to what I think is one of the most important films ever made. And thus, I genuinely believe one of the most important works of art of the 20th century. Friedkin read it and he liked it. He said, I can't remember. He said something very complimentary, like on Twitter, just reposting it and just saying, you know, reactions like this are why I made the movie. So something like that. It was something very sweet. And that's always surprising because he had such a reputation. You know, he's a ball bust. He's a ball breaker, which was the original title for Sorcerer was Ball Breaker. And Friedkin's a ball breaker. But he slid into my DMs Which is that's a shock, by the way, when you're going about your day and someone slides in your DMs like, well, hey, who's this? And it's fucking Hurricane Billy Friedkin.
And you are treading on fucking eggshells. You're like,
And so,
oh
like,
my
well, I mean,
God.
it's got that thing where, like, automatically you're like, I don't want to, oh, God, whatever I do, don't let me piss him off. This is gonna be a very random pull, but I always think of this when I think of Billy Friedkin, that movie City Slickers. You remember when Jack Palance's character dies, and the only eulogy they give him is like, "Dear God, we give you whatever his character's name was. Let's say it's Red, dear Curly. It was Curly. It's like, Dear God, we give you Curly. Don't piss him off. That's the kind of eulogy you'd give about Friedkin. You'd warn God not to piss him off." And because he was known for just having this volcanic temper, just pure rage, this fucking guy, which I loved about him, is he was just so angry at everything. And but yeah, he was just like, hey, I want to get in contact with you, and what would be the way to do that? And I was like, I guess phone. I don't know. This was COVID, the first summer of COVID, by the way. So it wasn't like we could just like, well, we'll go get lunch at Formosa, and so he gave me instructions for how to call, like, his actual personal line, not go through an assistant, not go through whatever. And that day I called him. My body had a second layer of skin of it was a sheen of pure sweat. Like I was lit I was poor, like literally, like you see it in movies, you don't believe it, where people are so scared they start sweating. Like it was raining off of my
I know the
body.
feeling.
I was so scared. Thank God I always only wear black, because like I was just slicked in sweat. And I'm not even gonna try to do the Friedkin impression, but
Can you do some of it? It's so good, Travis.
if you've heard the
It has
man's
amused
voice.
us for about 6 years. I need you to give me some Billy, some of the things that he said.
Well, maybe when I get to South, but like, I mean, he used a lot of bad language about people that I can't repeat on here because they're still alive. He had some thoughts about some very beloved directors of ours, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but he was insulting to almost everybody except me, who on this call, he was so sweet and so kind. And at first, like, it made it sound like he very much wanted, like, he kept saying, so what are we gonna do, me and you? Like a project or something. And I'm like, I have no idea what he's talking about. And I don't know if he's talking like a podcast or a piece of writing. Like, I thought maybe he wanted me to like do a longer form thing on Sorcerer. But honestly, in retrospect, looking back on it, I think, and I've heard that he's done this with a few other people. I don't think it was just because I kissed his ass in the essay, because I actually am not very kind to him as a person in the
No,
essay.
you're very fair. You're very fair with him, and you're
I'm,
very,
you know, he, I mean, he was an asshole maniac, and I make it clear in the essay, like, at the, when this movie was being made, this motherfucker was out of his mind. He's a maniac, and he risked people's lives, and he was genuinely cruel to almost everyone involved in the film. The only one he really seemed to care about was a pig who accidentally died during filming. That got ran over by a truck, and he halted filming for 2 days because he was so upset. Everybody else, they're getting dysentery, they're getting arrested for drugs. He's cutting everybody loose. He doesn't give a fuck about anybody. He just wants to make his picture, make his work of art. But I mean, I get it. Pigs are better than people. I don't disagree. But anyway, he just spent 2 hours, making me feel good, weirdly, and really, being like, I like what you do. Keep doing what you do. Figure out what you would want to do with what you're doing, and maybe we'll talk again. And for a long time during the call, I really thought, is he trying to get me to do a pro? Like, I was so panicking, and the way he was like, what are we going to do together, Travis?
You
What do
get
me
just,
you
I mean,
do?
it's an
It's
overwhelming
just
thing
it's
for,
just
yeah,
yeah,
like
it's
you're.
disorienting. But I think I realized, I think he was just like, you need to figure out what you got to do with what you're doing, and then maybe we'll meet again. And unfortunately, that, I mean, he passed away.
You did.
He was very kind to me, and he was very generous with his advice and his compliments, and just a man who you would expect to be almost unfathomably cruel, especially to people who are nice to him.
Yeah.
Because he's the kind of guy that would be like, "Don't kiss
He
my
doesn't
ass."
suffer fools. I mean,
No, but no.
there's like the what's the amazing thing with like Nicholas Winding Refn talking to him? Where
Oh yeah,
like
when
where
like
like where he's like being so sycophantic and lovey, and then he's also being like a bit of a blowhard about his own, you know, creating his own masterpieces, and freaking just like shreds him.
Dro only God forgives. That's not even a blip. It's not even a fart out of the asshole of humanity is the exact words that Friedkin said
Jesus Christ.
when Nicholas Winding Refn said that only God forgives is his sorcerer. If
Oh.
that's your sorcerer, what does that make 2001? He's like, and I just, yeah, it's not even a blip, it's not even a pimple on the asshole of humanity, only God forgives. And so, yeah, bless his heart, Hurricane Billy. Anyway, so yeah, I do have a personal connection to Friedkin. He was very kind to me on a at a time in my career when I needed, I think, a master samurai
Just say keep
to
doing what you're
welcome me into
doing.
the
It's
fold.
a
As
great
you
it's a
said,
great.
you know, you kind of said it might sound cheesy, but I mean, he did kind of knight me. He, you know, it was when you have a master look at you, and to use the jazz man sequence from Collateral. It's like when in Collateral, where Miles Davis meets the jazz man, he says one word, it's cool. And this was Friedkin looking at me, reading my essay, and going, cool. And it meant a lot to me, and it actually, I think, put me on a path that I needed to be on, and that I'm still on. Thank God, I haven't had a real job since. So I have a very, very emotional connection to what I already felt was his best film. And as you know, movie obsessives do, we find certain movies and we make them ours. You know, we fold them into our personalities
Don't know
for
what you're
good or for
talking
ill.
about. Don't know what you're
And
talking about.
for me, Sorcerer has always been one. You know, I have been with, I mean, I was not there when it fucking premiered in 1977, but
You've
I
gone to
have
like
wa
25 of these
well, I was gonna
screenings.
say, this actually comes up. I have you know, I was there when it got its very shitty pan and scan, horribly colored VHS release. I was there for the equally abysmal pan and scan DVD that was so bad that Friedkin re literally wrote a review for it on Amazon, threatening people and telling them never to buy it. And then, after about 15 years of that horrid DVD being in existence, I was there when Friedkin sued Universal and Warner Brothers, the two companies that produced this film, because it was so expensive, it required two companies to produce it and distribute it across the world. He sued Universal and Warner Brothers to figure out who owned the original camera negatives so that he could scan it and make his own Blu-ray, which he did, I believe it was in 2013, 2014. And so I've seen that VHS, I've seen that DVD, I've happily owned that restored Blu-ray, and seen that restoration theatrically. I have also seen a number of times the original 35 millimeter prints that the film was shot on, the high fade Eastman color stock. And Eastman color negatives. I've seen those 35 millimeter prints of those projected at the New Beverly. So I've seen, with the exception of seeing the film premiere on day one,
You've seen every other part of its life.
and not, short of, seeing it on fucking, Laserdisc, which I don't even think it got a Laserdisc.
I don't think you got a
I've
laser
seen
disc.
it. I've seen this movie on just about every incarnation it has existed on. And so I was very, very excited. And not that that makes me any kind of expert, or it makes me obsessive, but it is someone who is very familiar with the nooks and crannies of this movie, which I do watch probably 4 to 5 times a year. I stopped logging it on Letterboxd because I get embarrassed, but I've watched it. I do watch it for. Usually the New Beverly will play it like once a year, or the Vista, and then
I was going to
there's
say,
a
like, in our
weird
friendship, I reckon we've been on the phone to each other or texting or whatever. And you're like, yeah, Jordan and I are going to see Sorcerer, our dear friend Jordan Harper. I'm like, and I reckon I've got that message 4 times over the last few
it's I
years. So
mean
it's come around.
it's one of those, if you can see it on the big screen,
I mean, if the
it's an experience. It's a true experience.
Heat on 35 or Miami Vice on 35. What are we talking about? You go and see those
It
movies.
changes you. It
Yeah.
changes you, man. And you see it with a crowd. Boy, seeing Sorcerer with a crowd is
Oh my
magic, too.
God. A frothy New Bev crowd. They would just be
A
going
frothy. But
berserk.
Seeing it with a crowd is something else. And so anyway, like I said, I also watch it, a couple four times a year aside from theatrical, because it's an important movie to me. It's a nourishing film to me. It's a great film to watch when you're stressed out, because you can always go, well, at least my shit ain't this bad. It's a fun movie to,
At least my shit ain't
yeah.
as bad as all four of these
Yeah.
lead characters who get entwined in this movie.
But it's also a good movie to watch when you're in a good mood, because you can just marvel at the majesty that this fucking maniac went out there and was like, I'm gonna remake Wages of Fear as my big follow-up to two of the biggest movies of the 1970s. I'm gonna remake this difficult, semi-obscure existentialist French masterpiece. And he did. And it took the rest of the world about 30, 40 years to catch up to him, as is usually the case. And Criterion finally caught up as well, and decided to give this film the 4K treatment, which should usually, be cause for celebration. It's a big deal. It's a great movie. And I don't know if you can hear in my voice, I'm equivocating a
Is it?
smidge.
I'm watching Travis, who's had his candid I'm talking to Blake face, and now he has his I'm being diplomatic.
Well,
Which to be fair, this part of the Criterion Sessions, we talk about different obviously some of the technical. Sometimes it's straight up, and I don't think it's a, if you're a stranger to any of the physical media shows that I've done, it's like I will unequivocally say I would rather lower resolution for an original cut of Heat that is from an original 35 millimeter print because of the way that the color looks and the color timing of that particular thing. The color corrected, 4K'd up, slightly tweaked stuff. It's like whatever I get in that higher definition range, it just doesn't, it is not the same. It is not the same to me. And I'm like, okay, it's fine. It is what it is. Like, but that's why I'm part of the reason why I got an expert, an obsessive, a traveler with this movie is because I can only marvel at how incredible this is, and like look at the different features and interviews and all these wonderful things that have made this part of it. But I don't have the expertise to look at it and go, is this, does this do it justice? Because it does
Well,
justice
since
for me as
that's
a passive viewer, but I'm not the guy.
that's
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Tricky. It's tricky. We're gonna go some places with this real quick. If anyone hasn't seen the movie Sorcerer, it's this film about four different criminals from four different walks of life, from four different parts of the world. An assassin, a political terrorist, a white collar criminal embezzler, and a mob wheelman. They all commit separate crimes in their different corners of the world. Crimes so heinous that there's a a price on their heads. Well, not the assassin, but there's a price on their heads, and so they all flee to this one country that everybody goes to when you got to hide out. But the problem is, in this kind of very Jim Thompson-y The Getaway type way, it is a country that you can pay just enough to get to, but you can never have enough money to get out of. It becomes purgatory. Now, at the same time, this country is being exploited by American oil companies, and they have a derrick that blows up, and it creates this never-ending fire that will not stop burning. And the oil company realizes the only way they can end this fire is if they get some nitroglycerin into the fire and just blow it out, blow the entire fucking derrick away. Problem is, it's in this country, it's this God-forgotten, incredibly difficult, horrific landscape. It's like hell itself. You can't fly, the nitroglycerin's too unstable to fly it to the location. So all you can do is drive it. But if you bump it, if you nick it, if you tap it just slightly, if you hit a tiny little stone in the road, your entire truck will blow up. And so they have to get suicide jockeys. They have to get people with nothing to lose. And so these four men who are each hiding out in this country and have not, they can't escape it any other way. The company's like, we will buy your way out and give you a check so that you can go live your life consequence-free if you risk taking two teams, two men per truck, two trucks, drive through purgatory, drive through purgatory, bring the nitro to blow out this fire. And anyone that survives, you get out of purgatory. And that's basically the film. And it is harrowing. It is incredible. There are sequences, two of which, one of which I will say that takes place with one truck on the bridge, on a rope bridge. I'm not going to give away a lot of spoilers, but it is so fucking good that Friedkin literally repeats it with a second truck just to show you how good it is. And he makes it even more thrilling the second time. I've never seen that done in a movie where it's like, you know what? This gag was so good. We're going to do it 2 minutes later, one more time, because you will not believe how good it was that first time. You're still reeling from it. So anyway, that's Sorcerer. That's Sorcerer in a nut. And so tricky thing about Friedkin, and I hate making a comic book comparison when talking about Friedkin, but I'll do it. Forgive me, because I'm not a comic book guy. So if I get something wrong in this analogy, fuck off. Anyway,
I'll correct you and then swiftly say, who gives a shit?
bless your
If the
heart.
analogy works,
So,
that's what we want.
Friedkin was always kind of like the Joker in that he would give you multiple choice with like his origin stories, with all of the different myths about him. The making of a movie that he would explain in 1993 would be totally different than the way he the story he would tell you in 1986, and it would be totally different than what he would tell you in 2014. He was a showman and kind of a charlatan and an entertainer and a bon vivant and a raconteur. And so, he'd tell you one version of the rope bridge filming, and then 20 years later, he'd tell you a completely different story. And that was part of the charm of him. It's like he was fucking with you and you knew it and he knew you knew it. And that was part of the, it was fun. So the thing
Now,
about
in
Friedkin
Australia, we
is he.
say a line that has been immortalized by a criminal and psychopath, Mark Chopper Reed, never let the truth get in the way of a good yarn.
There you go. Exactly. And that was Hurricane Billy. Now the problem is that sometimes extends to his masterpiece, Sorcerer. And here's the problem with Sorcerer. This was shot, the original Sorcerer prints, after the film was shot, they were struck on high fade Eastman color, which is a film stock. Now, problem with this is those prints fade. They fade rather quickly. So it's difficult now in. I mean, it was difficult in the 90s, it was difficult in the 80s, it was difficult in the 2000s. It's difficult to now know what exactly Sorcerer originally looked like in
Because
terms
that
of.
because immediately as that's projected on, it's going to start to degrade.
And every print I have ever seen, and I'm happy to see them in any condition, so this is not a complaint, but any print I've ever seen of Sorcerer has even either been a pink print. Which is essentially, I mean, the print is pink. The dye has faded and spread. So it's like watching the film with just like a pink wash across it. Or more recently, the ones I've seen at the New Bev, they're just faded. And that's just the way it is. If you want to see it on film, you're going to see a faded print. And that's okay. The texture and the tactile nature of that in and of itself is an experience. You're watching something that has been watched and experienced by other people like you, and it has been thrilled over and sweated on, and it's great. So the problem is though, with those prints having faded, we don't know exactly what a restored sorcerer should look exactly like, and that's always been a problem. And so, when it first came out on VHS, it looked like shit. When it came out on DVD, it somehow looked even worse on DVD than it did on VHS. Now, where things get kind of complicated, and I hope this isn't too boring for anyone listening, but hey, this is a fucking Blu-ray podcast. What do you expect? When Friedkin did his restoration, he supervised this restoration. Now, the controversial thing about one of the many controversial things about William Friedkin is his restorations of his own work in the 21st century have been
Mm.
very controversial because he changes the way they look. He changes their color timing, which is kind of like the color tinting, you know, whether something is kind of cool or hot or a little too red, a little too green, a little too blue, a little too washed out. He futzes with his color timing. The Blu-ray,
The
for
great
instance,
masters
of
are fucking stinkers, man. They
I know, I know,
tinker
and I know, I know, I know your holiday
fucking
card buddy. He likes to
shop
do it too.
my holiday
But
card, buddy.
Michael Mann, he likes to tinker. But you know, some of these Friedkin was kind of one of the worst sinners. As much as I love him, he would really fuck with the way the first French Connection Blu-ray that came out is unwatchable. It's
Oh.
absolutely unwatchable
It's not
because of
good.
how he tries to make it look like a modern movie. And the great thing about his aesthetic, especially in the 70s, is that he merged documentary filmmaking with narrative filmmaking, so that even though you're watching, you know, films of fiction, they looked like handheld documentary crews where we're just happened to be there catching Popeye Doyle whipsaw through Brooklyn. Now, to the point where, like, the cruising Blu-ray of his great queer serial killer film in New York. All the club scenes, they're this bizarre blue. Everything is like this steel
Is that on
tinted
the new
blue.
one? Is that on the new one
No, no, no,
too?
no, no.
Oh,
That
the
not
new
on the
one's been
4K.
f the 4K's been
Because
fixed.
what
'Cause I remember the blue. I
the
haven't got the
Blu-ray
4K yet.
that he oversaw the restoration of, everything in the club sequences, it's the same kind of blue of the final scene of Fight Club when Marla and narrator are
Jesus
standing
Christ.
with out over the city, and there's that aquamarine blue that the whole scene is tinted as. And that's great for Fight Club. It's fucking bizarre in Cruising. And there is a rumor, and I'm not, so I could be wrong, but there is a rumor that Arrow, who recently restored Cruising to 4K and returned it to its original color timing, so it looks like it actually takes place in the real world, and Kino Lorber, who also recently put out Bug, and
Bug, the copy of Bug that I have for imprint,
the
the
put a
imprint Bug
yeah
is
for,
fucking unbelievable.
well, that and oh God, the Tommy Lee Jones, the Rambo ripoff that I love. It's great. I mean
The
that it's
Hunted.
a The Hunted, yeah. Those got dropped side by put out side by side on 4K. There is a rumor that these companies, I'm telling tales out of school, so I could be wrong. There was a rumor that Arrow and Kino and now Criterion, that they actually waited until after Friedkin's passing to release these discs because they, bless his heart, did not want him to fuck them up. And to they wanted to release as close to the original, what
Yes.
these films looked, what they were intended to look like when they were released, not what the filmmaker might have wanted them to look like in 2025. Now, I'm giving you all of this backstory to talk about Criterion's release of
Sorcerer.
Sorcerer, which on 4K, which I've been waiting for for as long as I've known what 4K is. I will say that I'm not thrilled, because the Criterion kind of ended up doing exactly what everyone rightfully accused Friedkin of doing, which is they have tweaked and they have played with the color. Criterion, bless their hearts, I love them. What they have done for restoration and preservation of films, both lost films and even popular films, is second to none. And you know, there are a lot of movies that exist in our lives that are some of our very favorites that are only in our lives because Criterion did the
Yeah.
work. And you know, I mean, down to literally pioneering the fucking commentary track. You know, what I think was it Silence of the Lambs they did? I can't, but they've done a lot with their
The
like
most
the commentary
important,
tracks
no, the most
on their
important
original
commentary
Laserdiscs back
track,
in the day.
the most important commentary track that's ever been committed to audio, the Ben Affleck Armageddon commentary
Well, yeah,
track.
I mean, there you go. There you go. That too. But I mean, they literally spearheaded, you know, they were one of the pioneers of things like that. Like, so, you know, their contribution to the preservation of cinema is probably incalculable at this point. That said, I will say that, you know, Hey,
What does
it's,
it
you know,
feel?
they're.
What's the color timing feel like to you? Is it
Well,
too
let me, let me,
crisp?
well,
Is it color like
here's
a
what, here's what they kind of have had a habit of doing. If you look at a lot of recent releases, sometimes it's to make the director happy. I'm looking at you, Michael Mann, Michael Mann's Thief. Other times they seem to be doing it cowboy on their own, where they add this very blue-green, aquamarine teal color timing. Sometimes it's so obtrusive as to be offensive, and I will get rid of the disc, which is what happened with Mean Streets, Scorsese's Mean Streets. I challenge anyone to watch that disc and not just have their jaw hit the floor if they've seen any other version of that film. It's just like watching it with 3D glasses on, but with your red eye closed, so you're just watching it through the blue lens. It is bizarre.
Yeah,
I would also.
I've got the other one. I've just got the I didn't actually get the Criterion Mean Streets.
It's
I already had one. There was one
it's
from
rough.
there was another release. I'm just trying to find it.
Well, as you're
It's
looking, I'll keep
Yeah, you keep
ranting,
Oh yeah, no, this one
and
Yeah,
I will
it's a
say that
UK one. It's a UK release
they
that I've
did
got.
the same thing with Night Moves, a film which I saw on a Sunday night with our pal Jordan Harper on a 35mm print at the beautiful Egyptian theater here in town. I saw an original print from back in the day. The color timing was natural. It's naturalistic as hell, as the cop from Reservoir Dogs says. Everything looked real. Flesh tones looked like flesh tones. Grass was green. Sky was blue. Corvettes were red. Sand was brown. Everything made sense. And then a couple days later, I picked up my Criterion version of the disc, and everything is just this weird blue green. I don't know why this is a house style. I don't know why this is applied. I don't know if it's to add a layer of modernity and make things look like a modern movie, but where all of a sudden everything looks like a David Fincher movie from 2009. And it's frustrating. And I will say that there is, very similarly, there is a sheen of that teal in this release. It is not nearly as obtrusive as these other films I've mentioned, but it is there. It's especially to someone who has
Yeah,
obsessively
your eyes
courted
are
this film
trained.
as much
Like
as it's.
I've literally sat with people with movies like, my core obsessive movies, and I can watch it, and I literally
You
go,
can see the things, but they can't see the
they can't
things.
see it. Someone who's sitting
Yeah.
with me watching Heat, and I was watching the director's definitive edition or whatever it is called, the most recent 4K, and I can watch it, and I go, nope, timing's off,
Like
a fraction of a frame, I can't
there's
do
a
it.
scene early there's a scene early in the movie where an assassin kills a guy, and it's in a hotel room, and the walls of the hotel are yellow, but in this version
They're
they're almost
white.
green.
Yeah, they're oh, sorry, they're
Or they're
whitish
whitish
gray.
yellow. They're white. Yeah,
Yeah.
and it's like, what? That's not what the movie was. And then like, there's a blue bus in the Middle East section that is just like Pepsi can blue now. It's bizarre. Where it was kind of like a faded and beat up in the original. Like it's meant. It was a faded truck. It was not meant to be bright. And again, this is shit where some people are going to hear this and be like, who the fuck cares? Like
No,
we're getting this in the proper
it went
aspect
when
ratio with.
we're not saying none of what we're saying here is meant to diminish the fact that a movie that was essentially lost is now canonized and in glorious 4K and has a
You
suite
can
of
literally see every bead of sweat and pore on
yeah
Roy Scheider's nose.
it's amazing. It has such amazing special features as well, which we might could briefly touch on, but I just
It's
It's
frustrating.
also a cha it's also a challenge, right? What an immense challenge, especially on the way that the film was struck. It's like you just wonder, you hope that the restoration things, and this is why sometimes directors are pains in the ass when their own work are restored, because they are so fastidious about all those little details. So yeah, it's just really interesting. I thought this would be a good curio conversation, because I feel like we don't have to you don't always have to be sort of slavishly advertising and saying this is the definitive edition, because there's been plenty of occasions where like I have to buy two. Like, there's the Vinegar Syndrome release of The Keep, and there's an Imprint Films release of The Keep, and I will unfortunately, well, I'm on one of them, but I will definitely be getting both of
Mean,
those.
well, I wanted to your term. What I want to come back to, and which is you said, definitive edition. I think what muddies the water with Sorcerer is there is no such thing as
Yes.
definitive edition.
Yes.
VHS sucks. The DVD sucks. They're both out of print. Thank God for it. The film prints are faded or washed out. Now, Friedkin's Blu-ray, which is probably my preferred version of the movie, even that, he dialed the colors way
Way
up.
up, yeah.
They are hypersaturated. Now, I will take that because he dialed them up evenly across the board. The greens are as intense as the reds, the oranges are intense as the blues, the yellows are as intense as the whites. So it's not like it's timed in one direction or the other. It's just everything is cranked up to 10. So is every it, like the
It's
colors are
everything
very
feels
hyper.
like, yeah,
Like
hyper.
the first time you get a helicopter shot over the jungle, and that
That's
green is
such a
so
fucking.
furious, it like tattoos on your retina. Now, it's The Sorcerer is a very intense film, so I actually, while I do not believe that is the most camera accurate, this is what audiences were seeing at the Chinese theater in 1977. It's as probably as close as we're gonna get to an even keel version of the movie, but it's not definitive. Nor is this, while this version, there's more
It's
information in every frame. You can see things even just a bit more clearly, and there's a beautiful detail, and the aspect ratio is slightly corrected in a way that it was not on Friedkin's version. This is not definitive either, because they have clearly fucked with the color timing, and by making everything kind of teal and kind of a little bluer, it also pulls back on that intensity. The fires don't burn nearly as brightly. The greens of the inferno of the forest is not nearly as green. The skies are a little bit more washed out, and not that kind of piercing blue. Skin tones are a little bit more kind of muddy and tan, as opposed to just like Roy Scheider looks like he's fucking carved out of mahogany in the Blu-ray. And so there's what I was going to say, to also be fair to Criterion, even though they have changed it, this is definitely for sure not what audiences saw in 1977. I cannot also say that they are erasing a definitive version, because there is,
No, they're not overriding anything.
in keeping with the thing about Friedkin, and him always changing his stories, it's somewhat fitting that with his masterpiece, there is no right version. There can only be audience preferred version. Personally, I will probably watch the 4K a couple more times, and then ease back in to the Friedkin approved Blu-ray. I that's the version I'm the most used to. It's the one I like.
I've got that copy, yeah.
I like that. I like the intensity of it. I don't like kind of the dullness of the colors in this version, and I don't like the weird teal. I don't need this movie to look like it was fucking made by David Fincher in 2008. I don't need that. And I can tell you from
Speaking of that,
Friedkin,
just as speaking
from what things some things that Friedkin told me on the phone, I can tell you Friedkin would not want his movie to look like a David Fincher movie either.
I was just gonna say, speaking as we're on the downhill slope of this, is like it's also like one of your favorite movies of all time is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, another movie that you did an absolutely brilliant essay for. And
Let's we can't be real careful here with what you, if you're talking about Friedkin, just we there's
no,
things we need to keep between
not
us.
freaking. No, I'm just talking about
Okay.
the here's David Fincher, who is making the sequel to
Yes.
and from Quentin Tarantino's glorious and vibrant and electrifying shooting on 35,
Oh,
and then
yeah,
taking it into the
yes.
digital realm with David Fincher. It just feels like,
Making into a Netflix movie. That's
wow,
gonna be great.
wow.
Fantastic. What a time to be alive. So I will just say, that said, I do think, if I say something nice, department, I just want to say the extras on this disc are absolutely fantastic. That conversation that we referenced with Nicholas
It is
Winding
here.
Refn, where they
It is
bust each
here.
other's balls, that's on there, so you no longer have to run to YouTube or the old French Blu-ray to watch that. There's lots of there's interviews with the original writer Wayland Green, who also wrote The Wild Bunch, and the editor Bud Smith. You've got director James Gray and Sean Finnessy. They're talking about it.
I think
There's
they
a
actually
great
just released that as a separate podcast now,
yeah.
which is cool.
Yeah, it's a yeah. It was, I believe, new just for this disc. And there's a documentary called Friedkin Uncut, and like literally any documentary about Friedkin is interesting because he's so fascinating. So there's a lot to
Yeah,
love.
it's a lot
Although
to love.
there's not a commentary track. I got to say real quick. I mean, I've probably already lost any shot I have working with Criterion after doing this episode. But let me just say, Criterion guys, you guys spearheaded the commentary track. Go back to adding those. Not even the. And I'm not just saying this because I do commentary tracks. I miss the Criterion commentary track. And this is a movie that deserves someone yapping on top of it once you've seen it 500 times. But I will just say,
Can I just
there
say
is no
also,
such.
while we're in the middle of this together? Travis, I want to tell a story where you're the main character.
Oh, my favorite kind of story.
There's one of the great independent film publications that still exists that emerged about 10 years ago. It's grown into this amazing nursery for some of the best film minds that are working and people that go off and have other fantastic jobs and then come back and write long form, really deeply personal, meaningful criticism. Brightwell Darkroom. Travis is one of the editorial team members there. And Travis, I don't know what meeting it was with your crew, but there was a time where Travis said to his team, if anyone comes to us to write about Michael Mann's Heat, this is when our friendship was sort of starting, and you let them do it and it's not Blake, I will fucking blow this place apart. Or something to that effect. You were in your Hurricane Travis moment.
That sounds like me. I get kind of I get fussy. I get
You
passionate.
got a bit passionate and feisty. And I just want to say, if Criterion is out there, and I know that there's a couple of big Michael Mann movies that are on the horizon, I'm gonna get pretty feisty if someone doesn't tap me on the, if there is ever a Heat Criterion. And I look down at that disc. I know who's going to be on it, by the way, and I know all of those people, and I've spoken to them all multiple times. But if I'm not
Well,
in that chorus of voices,
just get on that horn. Get on that horn. Do your Hanukkah prayer, buddy.
I don't want to go to him. I want to
You know
talk to
his name.
Criterion.
You know his
I
name.
want to talk to Criterion. But I'm just
Well,
saying, if there's ever a Heat, if there's ever a Heat Criterion and or a Miami Vice Criterion, and they don't shout out to our dear love, Katie Walsh, one of our dear nearest and dearest, and myself, I'm gonna be mad. I'm just gonna say, I'm gonna be feisty.
Oh, I'm waiting for the day they announce Inherent Vice.
Oh
I'm waiting to
my.
build up that head of
Oh.
steam.
Okay. That one would, that, Travis,
Calm
that
down.
would.
Calm down. Calm down. Calm
Oh
down.
boy.
It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. So as we wind this down, I do want to say,
That's just going off on the fucking.
yeah, we're just a
And
couple of
every, you know what? We are fucking sorcering this. So, the spirit of Billy took us. Look at us just driving over the fucking
we're
road bridge
just.
with
You
nitroglycerin.
know, we're just having a little sleepover chat now. But yeah, oh, there's also a great essay in here.
Oh,
I want to
Justin Chang
neglect
is
to mention
wonderful.
Justin Chang's essay is really good. And I want to call that one out. But yeah, that's the problem. There's never going to be, unfortunately, it's impossible. There will not be, unless somehow someone discovers in a temperature controlled room a never before screened.
Yeah, like
Original print of this film that has just been sitting there in 72 degree air conditioning since 1977. We're never going to get the definitive looking version of this film, and it's going to have to be multiple choice, as so many things with Friedkin were, because he was such a trickster. And so it's going to be kind of up to you. I think that for most people, this version, especially if they haven't seen it before, the Criterion 4K will be great, and they will watch it, and they will be thrilled, and they will think it's fantastic. They will see some of the most incredible action and thriller sequences that have ever been filmed for anything, for any kind of art. And they will love it, and it'll be great, and they will discover a brand new movie that changes them and maybe changes how they look at their lives in the world, and they'll be so happy. I think for 99.999% of people, that will be fine. For maniacs like myself, I will say that I will reference the movie, the 4K here and there. I will watch it a couple more times. I will probably return to my preferred version of the Blu-ray. One more thing to note, just to let you know, like how insane I am, just so people realize, like,
Oh, you
like
don't need
LeVar
to
Burton,
sell, baby. We get
like
it. That's why
what's
you're here.
what's LeVar Burton saying Reading Rainbow? Don't take my word for it, but in one sequence, there's a sequence set in France, and it's in French, and there's a wife who gives her husband a watch, and on the back of the watch is an inscription. Now, in the 35 millimeter version that was released, or the original version of the film, this is the original version, 1977. Friedkin approved. This is what he wanted audiences to see. The opening line of that inscription is, "In the 10th year of forever," because it's their 10-year anniversary. Now, that is what the subtitles say on the original print from 1977. It's what they say on the VHS. It's what they say on the DVD. It's what they say in the Friedkin approved Blu-ray. In this 4K, Criterion hired someone new to retranslate the French, and they have changed it to from in the 10th year of forever to in the 10th of our eternity. That is a wholly different interpretation of what was written, and it is a wholly different version of what was approved not just by modernist Friedkin, but by original 1977 sorcerer Friedkin. Now, I'm not
Doesn't
saying
have the
that this
same
new trans
poetry.
this but this new translation, who knows, it might be more accurate. I don't know. I failed French 2 years in a row in college. So this new person who translated it might actually be doing the more accurate version. But that is to sp in very insanely speak to my point that we are in a weird place where film preservation, I don't quite know which version of them is being preserved at this point. Certainly, at least with little things like that, that's not quite, that is one definitive moment where we can say, well, that's not what was originally planned. That was not what was originally written. That's not what was originally on the screen in 1977. Now, again, I think 99.9999% of the people who are in the market to see this movie, who have heard people talk about it for years, they're not going to give a shit about that. They're going to happily buy this in the 10th of forever versus in the 10th of our eternity. That's nothing. That is literally nothing. It does not change the movie at all. But like you said, it does futz with the poetry a little bit. And for the 1.0111% that for whom that poetry might be important, I would simply say, hey, give your money to the Friedkin estate. Why not both? Buy the Blu-ray and buy the 4K. Pick which one you want. Again, I'm not knocking Criterion. I actually think it's somewhat fittingly, I don't know if ironic would be the right term, but it's fitting that Friedkin's ultimate masterpiece, and this is, I do believe, his ultimate masterpiece. I think it's strangely kind of fitting that he made a movie that a definitive version of it is impossible to unearth. It's always going to be, well, whichever is the best story. And so if you are someone for whom that little extra bit of poetry isn't necessary, and you actually kind of like the kind of cooler tones, tealer tones, aquamarine tones of this home video release, and you prefer a slightly wider aspect ratio, and you like all the extra information that a UHD can pack into the screen, fantastic, you've got it. If you want something with a little bit more saturated color and evenly saturated across the board, with maybe a little bit more poetry to the foreign language stuff, I would say stick with the Blu-ray. Overall, though, what a fucking magical time that we live in, where we actually have the option of
Mult now,
we
mult
have
we
that
now
Friedkin.
have multiple
The Friedkin
sorcerers.
multiple choice. We have the
As long
Friedkin
as
multiple
we
choice.
that I think that the biggest definitive thing is sometimes restorations are going to be tough, and the further away that you're restoring a film, the harder it is to know the original intent. And especially when you
Yes.
strike it on a particularly tough print, it's even harder. So the restoration process is hard, and so the work that they're doing is great. But I always will love multiple choice. As a physical media
Yeah.
head, I will always love multiple choice, because if one restoration doesn't quite work, that's why things like Blu-ray.com exist, because you can go and have a look at the different prints that we use. Was it a 2K scan, 4K scan? Which print? Was it a fresh 4K? All these things. It's pretty magical. And I think now that there's a whole run of these film festivals that are showing restorations recently, Australian classic shot by Canadian director Ted Kotcheff, Wake in Fright, got its 4K
God
debut from
damn it.
Umbrella. And that fucking restoration is unbelievable. It
Oh,
was
I've
literally
ordered that. I'm
found.
looking forward to it.
Oh man, it's unbelievable. I've just watched it, received it. It's incredible. So this 4K industry is huge. But look, man, thank you so much for your time. This has been a
Yeah, there
really
you go.
great and informative chat, simply because I really wanted the person who I know cares and loves this movie so much to hear what your thoughts. And it's like, you're not always going to love that, but I think that insight is really great. And I think no matter what, if you're in for Friedkin, you're going to buy Sorcerer. Like that's what it is,
Yeah,
what it is.
I was not being silly when I said buy both fucking versions.
Yeah.
You owe it to your eyeballs and to your nervous system to experience this film in as many versions as possible. And I will say, the 4K is beautiful.
Oh, it's
It is
beautiful.
beautiful.
It's
It is lovely.
to me, the untrained eye, it's absolutely
Yeah,
fucking unbelievable.
I simply prefer the vibrancy and intensity of the blue version, the Blu-ray version. But yeah, but buy fuck it, buy both versions. Plus, you get a lot of cool extras gathered here that you cannot get elsewhere, including some stuff that was only available previously on a French Region 2 Blu-ray. So yeah, it's a great movie. Great movie. It is in the running for the best movie. And to have the multiple choice that Friedkin always liked to give us, it's kind of appropriate. I like it. And both will happily sit on my shelf at home.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.